And I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Tom Joyce. He is an artist, blacksmith, and designer. He's the recipient of a MacArthur Foundation Fellowship, and he crafted the quotation that is on one of the walls of the 9/11 Memorial Museum from the actual metal from the World Trade Center buildings, "No day shall erase you from the memory of time." Welcome. It's so great to have you here on 9/11.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. It's good to be here.
So you actually, although you live in Santa Fe, you were in New York on 9/11?
Yeah, by odd coincidence, I was there for an opening of an exhibition at the Museum of Arts and Design that was to open the next day on the 12th, and my daughters and I flew in to be with one another for a week in the city, and within an hour after my daughter from San Francisco arrived in the morning on September 11th, the first plane crashed into the building, and the events unfolded before our eyes on that day.
So you actually saw it?
We didn't see the planes actually hit the buildings, but we were out on the street because the apartment I was staying in didn't have a television, so the only way we would obtain information about what was happening was on the street. I found out about it while talking to the director of the museum about the event that would happen the next day, and I was on the phone with him when he first learned it was unfolding downtown.
So I just have to ask you, what was it like? What was that day like?
Well, I can't imagine having been anywhere else, wanted to have been anywhere else but in New York in that moment, to actually feel the pulse of what was happening at that time. I felt fortunate to be there with my girls, both of whom were grown at that point. And I remember we walked down to one of the fire stations to give blood. Red Cross had set up a couple of temporary facilities to be able to take blood, and there was a long line of people. And we realized fairly shortly that because of the lack of survivors, that there would be no blood needed by any of us. And how do you address that issue with your children when everyone is hopeful still that survivors will exist? And
there you are, a father with your daughters in a place where there's really nothing you can do, and you're aware that you're experiencing a national, international event, and that's not something that most of us ever experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that one of the most remarkable and immediately recognizable things about that day was how quiet it became in New York. And I've been to New York many times, and the contrast was palpable.
It's not a quiet city.
Yeah. And being on the streets, my oldest daughter, Kate, who was studying at the time to be a photojournalist, went to Union Park, and Union Square had it was where some of the first of the memorials began. These impromptu kind of shrines were set up. But she had gone there because there was a couple of mediators that set up a place, basically a forum, where the public was invited to address certain issues or questions, and they would create a safe haven by which people were able to enter into a dialogue to unravel some of the things that were raised in that moment. And it was really a remarkable example of democracy at its greatest, where the freedom of speech was able to be exercised in such a way, in a very immediate way, where a person could have a question about what was happening in the Middle East, and you have the Columbia professor of Middle Eastern Studies there within minutes to be able to discuss the facts behind what it is that was unfolding in terms of maybe the Bush family and the Bin Laden family connection or any number of different things that were quite fascinating.
And that was all on the day?
That was all on the day, and it extended for days after. This forum would happen as soon as people would gather in the early morning and could go until the wee hours of the night. And Kate hung out there just to listen, to observe, and to learn more about the issues that were being raised.
Did she actually take photographs on that day?
She took photographs all over the city, but it was more, she could have actually gone to Ground Zero. She had a press pass with her and could have been at Ground Zero, but chose not to, and instead recorded conversations between people on the streets, documented what was happening at Union Square. In fact, she has a series of photographs, black and white photographs, that documented the shrines as well that she just recently exhibited in a show in Chicago.
Now, how did you get involved with the project that we have been talking about, this quotation from Virgil, "No day shall erase you from the memory of time"?
Yeah, it was by invitation through Tom Hennis, who is the exhibition designer and the founder of Think. It's a design firm in New York that deals with museum exhibition design, the scenography of the exhibitions. And Tom and I had met a few years before, and he was aware of the work that I was doing using materials that had a previous history that I would embed into new forgings or sculpture that would speak about the prior life of that object, but bring it new life through a kind of transformation, making it into an art object that could also be discussed on another level.
So you actually used metal that was salvaged from the World Trade Center. Did you go to New York to pick out them? I mean, what was that process?
Yeah. So the commission actually was quite a complicated and long process, but the initial introduction stipulated that there was this material that could be used if I would want to, and I chose to work with retrieved steel, salvaged all the I-beams and channel iron that was salvaged at Ground Zero and was housed in a hangar at JFK Airport, Hangar 17, where many of the artifacts that one will see in the museum have also been sheltered over the last 10 years. The invitation was to come and to select the material, bring it back to New Mexico and forge it here to allow that material that had gone through, of course, a very violent process in the destruction of the building, but to have it go through a transformative process whereby through this folding and heating and changing the shape of the material that I would soften some of the effects of the kind of violent, tortured aspect that the material revealed just in looking at it.
And it seems like you're talking both on a completely physics and on a metaphorical level.
Yeah, it definitely was a multi-layered task involved in making it. This commission, I'd say, was more akin to the architectural work that I had done over 10, 15 years ago for about a 25-year period. I'd been making lots of commissions for architecture. And this one, because of the fact that it was able to satisfy both aspects from a conceptual standpoint, using material that was very charged with meaning as well, and allowing it to go through this process and forging it into a quote by Virgil that I felt very respectfully dealt with the human remains that would be behind this signage,
right,
which would be mounted on the wall where the 14,000 human remains will be forever entombed at the site.
Now, when you work with metal that has undergone impact like that, does it behave differently than metal that hasn't?
If the metal was in a part of the building that had heated, it would have been annealed, so it actually moved much softer. It was easier to fold and to forge than the material that hadn't. The stock that had just been crushed through the fall of the buildings would have been work hardened, so I would also feel that tension tied up inside the material too. And as soon as the steel is heated, it relaxes, and any tension that's built up in it is released at that moment, and so there's sounds that are associated with it. And that, for all of us that were working on the project, continually heard sounds that we haven't heard come out of the material that we're familiar working with up until this project.
How very strange. I mean, I know it's just metal, but it, for all the world, it sounds like it's got so many human and emotional dimensions in it when you're working with it.
Yeah. It feels that way as well, and definitely we approached it with a kind of reverence. It wasn't just a normal day in the shop forging a project. Before we began, we spoke about the need to be attentive to what it was that we were doing and to bring to the work during the days that we'd be forging a kind of really just an awareness of what it was that we were doing and what was represented in the material that we were working with.
I can't help but thinking of relics, in other words, religious objects whose meaning is not in their material, but in where they once were.
Yeah, There definitely was a kind of reliquary-like aspect to it, I would say. Especially the fact that each one of the letters is framed, each one of the panels, rather, that's forged from this folded material is framed by an additional piece of iron that encapsulates it. And so you have each one of the letters held in a kind of case, and it feels at once a part of a family of objects, but at the same time held as individual components, framed as if reliquaries as well.
When you went through the whole process and then finished it, was there a sense of, and again, maybe I'm just kind of projecting, but I would imagine there might be a sense of emotional completion, not just with the project, but with having been there on 9/11 and everything that that day meant.
Yeah. Well, there was definitely a feeling of having come full circle, and I felt fortunate to be poised in this moment to be able to receive the material and to create the work that hopefully respectfully addresses the issues at hand. The other thing that I might mention too is that after the events of September 11, 2001, I was given a small quantity of ash from the World Trade Center site from a friend who lived in Brooklyn, and I made a series of sculptures incorporating that ash along with soil from the Santuario de Chimayo and sand from a Tibetan Buddhist mandala that was made as a prayer for peace here. And so these three earth-like ingredients then were made into a special alloy to create a series of sculptures that would be given to family members that lost loved ones in the collapse, and also to be used as a fundraiser as they were auctioned off. The funds were donated to nonprofits that were involved in conflict resolution or education in various ways that that might speak to the origins of that material. So having in the studio the steel, the actual steel, in addition to the ash that I'd previously worked with, was also very poignant as a blacksmith, definitely.
So this is something you've done quite a lot, is use materials that have history and a meaning.
Yeah, one of the first projects that incorporated that would have been this baptismal font for Santa Maria de la Paz, where I asked parishioners to donate pieces of iron that reminded them of their past, that they could tell me a story about. And those stories were recorded along with photographs of each object that was donated. And then each of the pieces was forged and folded into individual sections that were then put together as if a quilt into a matrix that surrounded the font, so that the babies were really baptized in the ancestry, the stories, the ancestral stories of the entire community.
I do wonder about the physics of that. So when those actual materials and then the story and then the love are all embedded in an actual physical object, do you think they stay there?
I think something is posited that is, it may be ephemeral, and it may only be recognized within the living memory of those who know what that material was. But as a person who has had a long interest in archaeological remains from all time periods, many other parts of the world, there is a sense about the, especially inside the world of metals, where most metal is never just discarded completely. It's always reused in some way or another, and it's not just the recycling aspect, but sometimes it's a very purposeful reuse of an object that has seen a certain history that applies that importance to its new life in the hands of a metalsmith. And you'll find that there's many stories, but about bells, for instance, in churches, that
right.
People would donate their bronze candlesticks or their any kind of remnant that they could contribute towards it, so that it's really made from all those pieces and parts that make up a community.
So here we are on 9/11. What does this day mean for you? Now it's the 11th anniversary since that day when you were actually in New York and when the buildings fell and so on. What does 9/11 mean to you now?
That's a good question, because it's funny, Mary Charlotte. I mean, it's not funny, actually. It's interesting because a lot of my thoughts are really just very, there's a kind of calm about it that that until you had asked the question, I wouldn't have recognized it. But there's a kind of calm that I think permeated the whole process of transforming this material. And now that I see it having come to fruition after several years of negotiations with the National September 11th Memorial Museum, it feels as though there's a kind of spaciousness or something around the activity has taken something and allowed me to embed inside this material something that I maybe had been looking to kind of release. I mean, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but the very fact that you asked the question and that there was, yeah, there was a moment where I wasn't sure exactly how I would answer, it indicates that there's something quite important that was released in the process of actually forging the material and giving over this part of the project to the museum. Yeah, a tremendous release, I would say.
I think there is, in what you just said, a lot of food for thought for a process that you might call a process of gaining wisdom and choosing how we react to gigantic bad things that happen in our lives, whether they're individual or collective, and coming to a place of calm and coming to a place of wisdom about things that tend to be surrounded with so much emotion and anger, and as we talked about with Michael Schull, and vengeance and things like that. There is, I think, both in the art and craft of transformation that you did, and also different kinds of processes that the rest of us do, there is a sense of transforming and coming to a really different perspective on the same event.
Mm-hmm. As you were speaking, what came to mind is, and I think it's relevant here, when something so unspeakable happens and one has difficulty really getting your head around how to react or how to understand what seems insurmountable, really, in terms of gaining enough knowledge or information to really be able to make sense out of something so complex as what we experienced on that day. That the thought was, I remember when I was a child, when I was about eight years old, I was living in a convent while my parents were figuring things out in their marriage. And living in a convent with Sister Roberta, who was my third grade teacher. And Sister Roberta was a potter. And I remember my brother and sister and I in her care for about a month at this convent adjacent to the elementary school where we were going. She didn't know exactly what to say to us. She didn't know how to be a mother to us in that moment of confusion. And her solution was to bring us into her studio, into her clay studio, and she sat all three of us on the floor, and she gave each one of us a lump of clay. And to this day, each one of my brother and sister and I, we attribute that moment to one of the greatest gifts we were ever given, where something that we could never really address verbally, even if we had the skills at that age to be able to do it, we were able to express ourselves through a material. And that has stayed with us for our entire lives, knowing that even when questions arise to such a degree that it's unfathomable how we would address them or answer them, that through a material we can find our way into perhaps a place of calm that allows us to move forward, even though we could also be stopped in our tracks at that very moment.
It's quite amazing, because when you tell that story, it seems like she gave you the gift not only of perhaps going into the kind of art form that you did, but also the way you do it and how much you bring to it and how it becomes a life process and not just a craft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the malleability of material, of course, is very tactile in the hands of any artist. But there's also tremendous numbers, well, there's just a tremendous amount of meaning that can also be embedded in these objects based on our histories, and whether it's a collective history or a history of one individual, but it can definitely be embodied.
Well, Tom Joyce, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us on 9/11.
Thank you.
Tom Joyce is an artist and blacksmith and designer. His rendering of the quotation from the Aeneid by Virgil will be on a wall of the 9/11 Memorial Museum. No day shall erase you from the memory of time.